Welcome. My name is Rebecca Michael. I am the Advocacy Manager for the Independent Center, and I have three guests with me today. I'm excited to have them because they are my staff.
Yay!
So I will let them introduce themselves, and then we will jump into what great work that we do within our department. So go ahead, Elle.
Hi, my name is Elle Livinggood, and I'm a Community Advocacy Coordinator at the Independent Center.
Hello, my name is Carrie Botts, and I'm the Training Coordinator.
My name is Sierra Cortez. I'm also a Community Advocacy Coordinator.
So I have three staff that I have asked to join me today because we've had kind of a chaotic couple of months, and it's always good to come in and talk about what we do because we're kind of behind the scenes in some ways, but then we're very upfront, and I don't know, the best way to describe it is when there's a problem, they see us. When everything is good, they don't see us.
Yes.
Is that the best way to describe it?
Okay. Uh-huh.
So, let's talk about what community advocacy looks like and your perspectives. So Sierra and Elle, let's talk about that. And then we'll bring Carrie in because Carrie actually used to do this job. Then took put on several other hats and then came back. So clearly she loves the work.
I couldn't stay away for long.
So let's start with you, Elle. Talk to me about what your focus areas are and what this work means to you and why you do it.
So my three focus areas are healthcare access, assistance animal education, and then also disability awareness. For me, a lot of that just means creating access for people, making sure that there's equity for all types of people, including disabled people. I really am passionate about disability awareness, and Carrie and I work a lot on creating trainings that we go out and we provide to the community, which is really a place that I can give my heart to people and show them how we can be courteous and inclusive of all types of disabilities.
So does access look just like structural access, or are there different access points and what those look like?
There are so many different types of access, and I think that's why sometimes people get very overwhelmed with it, because there's so many different types of disabilities and so many different ways to create that access. And most disabilities are invisible disabilities, and so it's not actually structural access that we need to create so much. We have vastly improved on the structural access side, although there are definitely still ways to improve on that. But we really focus on a lot of etiquette and languaging and making sure that we're making people feel comfortable and feel respected, which then in turn creates more connection and makes more solid foundations for everybody to be equitable in the community.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Good deal. Sierra.
So my three focus areas are emergency preparedness, housing, and then ADA. So what it really looks like for emergency preparedness and housing, it's really a lot of systems change, in my opinion. Like right now, monitoring emergency preparedness is very systems focused. Like we've gone to county commissioners and we've seen change there, which is great within the county. So that's what emergency preparedness really looks like for us right now. So housing is a whole nother
ball of wax.
Okay. Housing is a whole nother one, and it's really fun to be able to have seen where other centers for independent living are throughout the nation, really, through a learning collaborative. The learning collaborative that we're participating in, we are, I would say, ahead of the curve for other SILs, but still, you know, there's things that we want to get done. So that's very exciting to see happen. And then ADA is just it is what it is. So it's constant monitoring and coordination, and again, nobody sees us until there's a problem, which is a good thing and a bad thing. Take it how you want to, but with ADA you have to make sure that everybody's in compliance, hopefully 100% of the time.
Is there a enforcement agency for the ADA, Sierra?
You know, it's funny you bring that up, Elle. We were just talking about that yesterday, but there's not, although there are ways to enforce it. So that goes into a lot of studying the ADA. So For example, Title II of the ADA is enforced by the EOCC or EEOC, whatever, the Equal Employment, whatever it stands for. But
all those acronyms.
There are ways to go about enforcing the ADA, and that's what ADA coordinators do, which is some training that our team is pursuing, which is very exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
So let's talk about what that housing looks like. Because housing is not just trying to find someone to live in a place that is affordable. Right. So one of our focus areas under the housing umbrella is universal design concepts.
Right.
And the earlier you get the universal design into your design of your new home or your apartment complex before you move in, it's just easier for everyone. Mm-hmm. So talk about that work that we're doing with universal design.
Okay, yeah. So I like to put, universal design makes a whole lot of sense to me, maybe because I'm a super reasonable person. It just makes a lot of sense. So what universal design looks like is a home or a place of living that is completely accessible and usable for everybody, regardless of disability, regardless of age, regardless if it's a child or if it's a grown adult. So we're talking lever handles on doors and sink handles. We're talking no step entries. We're talking all living space on one floor, lower countertops that can move, which is amazing. I just saw that recently. Things like that, just to make things more accessible for everybody. So the work that we're doing with universal design here in our area is to really get everybody on board, because everybody knows people build houses the way they've always built houses. Why? Just because. There's no reason that universal design can't be implemented into all new construction. And it's actually cheaper. It's very much so cheaper. And we're seeing that people want to age in place in their homes. And why would you want to move out of a home that you've lived in for 15, 20, 25, 30 years? I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. If you've decided to purchase a home and you want to grow old there and, you know, live there forever, then you should absolutely be able to do so. And right now, the way that homes are built, that's not allowing that. And universal design allows that. So as we get people on board, hopefully, I would love to see like every new construction everywhere built with universal design, because I think it's the logical way to go. But it also has to be affordable, which is a misconception around universal design right now. We're working on that.
We've seen a lot of that too. The responses that we get when we're doing our education, either with elected officials or home builders, it's just too expensive. And as we talk through this with them, we're finding that the only reason why they see it as expensive is it's not part of their bulk purchases. Their bulk purchases are cheaper because they do the knob handles. And so, that was one example. We buy 50 knob handles for multiple homes because that's what we've always done. And so what is really the price difference between the knobs and the lever handles? Mm-hmm. And kind of doing a comparison with the home builders and really showing them it really isn't that much more expensive. And if you increase your purchase, the price goes down. You buy more, you save more. Mm-hmm. And then every home has those simple lever handles and access is given. So, and I was interested because I saw a statistic just recently about how Americans move an average of 7 times in their lifetime. And of course, things happen within their life that they have to change. They change jobs and they move to a different state. That if you're at home or if you're staying in the same location and you're moving 7 times, it could be because you've got a job and you're making more money and you want a bigger house. Or then you lost that job and now you have to find a smaller house. You became injured and now you're disabled and now you have to find a house that's more accessible. So really thinking about buying a house to stay there forever and what your needs will be in the future is really what we're trying to drive there. So age in place mm-hmm. is really important to us. And it's...
Because everybody ages, right?
Yes, everybody does, regardless of disability. And that's what we're finding also in our community is that they're so focused on seniors that they're kind of reacting to all these individuals who are aging instead of being proactive and looking at it from a younger perspective.
Proactive, keyword there, right?
Yes, being proactive. And that's what that's the view that we're trying to educate our community in. And we'll get there. We're seeing some light bulbs as we talk to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's younger families that increasingly are wanting universal design as well. Think about, you know, couples or single people having babies and trying to get strollers in and out of their front door.
Right.
You know, it's the whole spectrum of age that really can benefit.
Yeah, exactly. But if we can jump on that bandwagon of seniors that need accessibility, then hopefully it'll just kind of go backwards into the generations, and hopefully individuals who are younger will still want to maintain aging in place as they grow older. So, that's housing. That's one of our largest issue areas. But, let's shift a little bit to healthcare access, because when we say healthcare access, we're just not talking about medical healthcare access.
Right.
So let's talk about that.
So this year, we are focusing on dental healthcare access as well as behavioral health and also mammograms and making those accessible for people, and then also eye doctors. And so those are the four focus areas within healthcare access that we're working on. And we're currently, Carrie and I are working on setting up focus groups for finding out more information about people's barriers within accessing dental health care. We're working on several different projects related to behavioral health and creating more access there, as well as removing stigma, which is really, really important in the behavioral health field, because that's one of the biggest barriers to receiving behavioral health care is the stigma. And Carrie, what was the statistic or age that you were finding, or amount of time that it takes people to receive mental health care?
Yeah, so on average, it takes people about 8 to 10 years from the time they start experiencing mental health symptoms to the time where they actually get help. And I was one of those people. I started experiencing mental health symptoms as a kid when I was 9 years old, and it was 10 years later, after having a crisis and being hospitalized, that I finally got access to treatment. And we're finding, sadly, that that's the norm.
That's that's an amazing statistic. Mm-hmm. And you've got to wonder, is it just stigma that is causing the delay, or is there really just not enough education to identify symptoms and connect them to a behavioral health diagnosis?
I think it's both. I think that ignorance and shame are very inextricably linked.
Sure.
And I think that because mental health challenges are not tangible, we can't see them, we can't touch them, they're not concrete, they're invisible. Because of that, they're harder to talk about. And we're just now starting to find language in our society to really even name things like anxiety or delusions or, you know, other kinds of symptoms that for a long time in our society we've hidden. And so we're just starting to find that language, and because we have that language, we can educate our society. But without that, it's truly impossible to get help if you can't talk about it.
Right, if we don't have the words to even discuss it, how can we even identify it or provide support for people? And it's almost like a symptom of American society that we so much revere stoicism, that when people find that they are experiencing symptoms of mental health disorders, that they don't want to acknowledge it because, you know, that's against everything that we stand for as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let's go back to dental health and eye doctors and mammograms. So in thinking about those specific practices, where are the access barriers?
Right. So one of the big access barriers for people receiving dental health care is structural access and even just getting in the door. A lot of dental offices are in, you know, small and old office buildings, that will often have stairs that you have to get up, or and especially in Colorado Springs, because we have a lot of older buildings, the hallways are very narrow and not wheelchair accessible. And then once you get in the door, you know, there's no spaces for wheelchair users to even sit in the lobby, and then they're sitting in the middle it makes people feel like they're a burden because people are constantly walking around them. And then you finally get into the dental chair, quote unquote. And, you know, now the doctors don't know how to work on you, and they're either working on you in your wheelchair, which is, you know, incredibly detrimental to your spine. If they're trying to move you, they don't have the proper equipment to move you into the appropriate chair. So we're finding that there's a lot of those structural barriers, as well as a lot of communication barriers. A lot of dentists are refusing to provide American Sign Language interpreters for deaf individuals. And those are a lot of the things. One woman, we have a survey going out right now, and I don't actually know if this is a woman. I just assigned gender, which is bad on me. But this one individual responded that she had issues accessing dental health care because they had to take their oxygen off during that, and that was caused their anxiety to increase and their breathing rates to increase.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
And so those types of things we're starting to identify. And once we identify all the barriers, then we can sit down with people who experience those barriers and talk about solutions.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That surprised me. I wasn't expecting to hear something so almost so simple to be such a big barrier. I learned something.
It was very interesting reading through the responses on our anonymous survey and just seeing people input, you know, short comments that really make your jaw drop in like five words.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's why we ask these questions. So we know then where do we need to put our education? Where do we need to put our advocacy efforts towards? So that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of get different perspectives. So, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk to Carrie. Let's get to get know Carrie a little bit more. So let's talk about your journey of getting to community training coordinator.
Sure.
Get into all the meat and potatoes of what you do.
Mm-hmm. So I started at the Independence Center back in 2014. So about 5 years ago.
Yay.
It's been such an adventure for me. I think I was meant to land at the Independence Center. So I started as a community organizer, working on housing issues and working directly with homeless people to kind of try to come up with some solutions to this housing crisis that we're really experiencing as a country. And it truly is a crisis. You know, people increasingly cannot afford to live in their homes, can't access the types of homes that they need. And a lot of people, because of circumstances, you know, having a medical emergency, running away from violence at home, you know, lots of these circumstances can lead people into homelessness. And so I learned a lot working with, you know, people who are surviving outside. They're the most resilient people I've ever met. And we got together, and the people really wanted to build tiny homes, and so we advocated for that. And we are seeing some more tiny home communities pop up around the country. So that was my first role at the Independence Center. I've also worked directly under our CEO, Patricia, as her assistant, and I've been in peer support, you know, working directly with other people with disabilities, facilitating support groups and doing one-on-one support with people. But when the training role came up, my heart just, you know, got so full, and it was a new position for us at the Independence Center.
It's so perfect for you.
it truly, like, because trainings have been, you know, just my passion, and I've always kind of added trainings whenever I could into my roles, because I just love writing and I love connecting with people. And and I think my favorite part about being a trainer is having the opportunity to listen to my staff, the other staff that I work with, and consumers, and kind of crafting these messages that hopefully do their experience justice. And then taking that out into the community, we're really hoping that with our trainings that we're getting people to question their mindsets about people with disabilities. I think that's really the root of any change that can happen in the advocacy work that we do. Mm-hmm. Starts with that education and that connection that that education creates.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. So to go back and kind of give some thought as to why we created the community training coordinator position was essentially in the advocacy department, the trainings for any community concern or issue essentially just fell under that department. And, you know, doing some internal conversations, who was managing that? Well, that was me, trying to manage all of these trainings and then also updating them and kind of tracking who should be the best person to facilitate the training. And then we realized that we have healthcare access that was really starting to gear up, and we knew that we were going to do some more trainings on healthcare access and what those look like and who's the best person to create those. And so I was gifted this position to be able to create this position for someone to come in and take over those trainings and really make sure that they're relevant and update them, and then coordinate further relationships with community partners so that we could then start generating more education. And so Carrie has kind of popped into that position perfectly. And when you say you listen to staff and kind of hopefully create something great from your conversation, you do that daily. I can't do what you do.
Same.
Yes. The patience that you have with kind of people just kind of dumping every thought that they have in their brain, and then you just take it and you make it into something beautiful. So, you definitely do this job complete justice, and excited to see what other things that you'll take off with. So, just a little plug for Carrie.
Carrie makes magic.
Yeah, she truly does. So let's talk about the trainings that you have updated so far that we have, and then also kind of the perspective of why we changed some of them to make sure that they were relevant. Mm-hmm. So where are we at with trainings right now?
So we spent quite a bit of time earlier this year updating our disability awareness training. Elle and I spent a lot of time working on that and really pulled in quite a number of staff. That training is truly kind of the book cover of our book, so to speak, of our trainings. And it's really kind of the foundation for everything that we educate the community about. And I think that our trainings are going to continue to evolve as we evolve and as we connect with more people. Because really the purpose is to represent those experiences and to make sure that people with all different kinds of disabilities really have that voice. So we're lucky as a staff at the Independence Center that about 80% of our staff live with disabilities. And so as a trainer, you know, I'm surrounded with people who are experts in our issues. And so it's very easy for me to just walk down the hall and talk to somebody who's blind and get his expertise on, you know, what it's like to go to the doctor and run into those barriers. And those people and those voices end up really creating the content. I just kind of mesh it all together. But it's really about, you know, those direct voices and their experiences. We also have been getting a lot of questions from the community and kind of confusion about assistance animals and, gosh, what's the difference between a service animal and an emotional support animal? And business owners, you know, are raising questions, or our people in the disability community are raising questions. So we listened to that, and we spent a lot of time updating that training. And Elle hosted an open house earlier this year, and we had probably 40 so people there. And we're going to continue offering that open house because we continue to see the need for that training.
We also have had a couple of our community partners ask to partner with them when they do trainings around with landlords, mm-hmm. and with renters, because it's such a hot topic that
and very convoluted too.
Yes, mm-hmm. It truly is, because you say here is the umbrella of assistance animals, but then we have the service animals, emotional support animals, we have therapy animals, we have then pets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just becomes quite the discussion. And everybody has a story. And then everybody wants advice on that story. And we're like, we're not attorneys.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We can't give you legal
We cannot advise on the legal side of this. But we can discuss it as a group and figure out solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's it. That's great. And what I really like about this team that we have is that each of you have your strengths in how you interact with the community in different ways. So, you know, when Elle hosted the open house, the team came together to make that happen. So, mm-hmm. Carrie, you coordinated all the speakers, because that truly is something that you are very good at doing, is coordinating and grabbing the information so that they can train and we can create a full package. So, you know, when you ask for one of us to do something, you're going to get a whole team of people that mm-hmm. work either behind the scenes with them to make that event possible.
We really truly fill in each other's blanks and create a well-rounded team mm-hmm. that can do a lot of different things because of that.
Yes. We do.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah. So, March was kind of chaotic for us because we did have the assistance animal, open house, but then 2 days later, thanks snow, because the snow created that mess. We had a candidate forum for at-large candidates for our Colorado Springs City Council, and Sierra hosted that one. And wow, that was, we had such a great response from it, not only from the candidates themselves, for consumers. So yeah, talk about that work.
First of all, I feel obligated to tell everybody that events are my thing. I so love events.
You're good at them.
Oh, thank you. But it was so fun because Becca threw this project at me literally the first day I started working for the IC, and she's like, "Hey, we gotta start planning this." I'm like, "Okay."
And you rocked
and
it.
You did. So. What really went into it was figuring out, okay, how to navigate through our bipartisanism as an organization, which was pretty easy once you figure it out. But
for some people.
For some people, yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. It was just bringing all the candidates together and holding them to our expectations. Those who RSVP'd were absolutely able to participate, and those who didn't were absolutely welcome to be a part of our audience and participate that way. So the candidate forum was great, and we had live news coverage by a local news station, which was fun, which actually sparked some training needs.
Yes.
Very clearly sparked some training needs, which is funny how all that works together. But that's one of the fun events that I've done. Yeah. So
it was kind of fun to watch you manage up, because you know there's this phrase where you say you're going to manage up, and you manage your boss, or you manage individuals that you're trying to take care of within an event, and you did an amazing job, because you know, when you manage politicians and their personalities and then try to make sure that they all have the equal access, because that is required, and we want to make sure that all of the candidates get to say their piece and all of our consumers get to hear it,
mm-hmm.
That is interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. You did a really good job navigating the nuances of
this. Yes.
Yes. And so what was really cool is that we were presented with this problem of we needed our moderator to hear questions that were not prepared beforehand.
Right.
Because we wanted to allow our consumers to ask questions as they heard the comments from the candidates. And so we had to figure out how to get that person the questions. And we'll throw out there that the person that is our moderator, who is Daniel, our co-host of the podcast, who's legally blind. So how do we do that, guys? How do we figure this out? Because no one really knew that he had an earpiece.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we asked some of the audience that were there that day at the forum, you know, hey, did you know that our moderator, you know, didn't actually have the questions in front of them, they would have been like, what?
Yes.
No. So, mm-hmm. and some of our planning meetings, I brought it up because we hadn't really thought about it. We don't really, I mean, when problems present themselves, we take care of it. And it's very easy for us to get through those boundaries. But I mentioned, I was like, so how are we going to do this? And everybody was just kind of quiet. And I was like, so a Secret Service earpiece, right? And they're like, yeah.
We'll
so what that looked like was some AirPods, the Bluetooth AirPods. Nobody knew. It went off without a hitch, kind of. They died at one point, but we fixed that. Yeah. So.
But what I love about that is it shows that all different kinds of disabilities can perform in different kinds of roles that people have historically thought that those disabilities were counterintuitive to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like we had Daniel being the moderator as a blind man, and we have like Rebecca at the CNA school who's a front desk lady and is deaf. And oftentimes those types of roles, people with those types of disabilities don't get in put into those types of roles because, you know, you can't answer the phone at the front desk or you can't read off a sheet of paper to moderate. But yet we just do it and we don't call out their disability and we just break those barriers down and provide access for people and show that disabled people can.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which is really awesome.
We're showing the community what it looks like for people with disabilities to thrive. Mm-hmm. And the more that we do that, I think we're challenging honestly, the biggest mistake that people make about people with disabilities is that they underestimate us.
Yes.
And so sometimes without even, you know, a direct training, just by modeling that we can thrive and we do thrive every day, that's very powerful.
Right. And, you know, when we decided on the moderator, no one thought about a disability as we want Daniel.
That's what we wanted. Daniel is a great moderator.
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
Yes. And so it wasn't, well, can he?
Because it was, of his how can we do this?
Yeah.
Let's it wasn't until out. A week before the event that we had been planning for 3+ months that we were like, oh, well, okay. You know, there's this boundary. Let's figure
great
it out.
Access.
Yes. We got this.
And we kind of roll like that, unfortunately, in our department. When we're kind of presented with these things that kind of drop in our laps, to kind of speak about that is we were kind of dropped this piece of legislation in our laps about 2 weeks ago as this is a possibility, prepare yourselves. It was just a draft. And then they told us 2 or 3 days later, we're changing it. This is going to be the second draft. And all of this stuff is coming at us like bits and pieces and from all these different directions. And we're trying to navigate through what the message needs to be to our community and what our stance is as the Independent Center. And so, you know, how many items had to get dropped from each of you in order to make any of the communication that we needed to make
a
happen.
Lot.
All of them.
All of them very quickly.
But we rolled with it.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's a testament to the resilience and the capability of this team. So just to throw that out there, I really appreciate it because, you know, I can walk into your office and go, stop everything. We have a problem. And really, it's not like a question of, but I have X, Y, and Z to do. It's okay. Where do you need me and what do you need to do? So, you know, I had the privilege to handpick each of you, for your roles. And because of that, I understand that the value that I have in each of you. So just know that I appreciate it.
we all love being here.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about a few things that are upcoming for us. Right now we don't have any really true events on the books, which is kind of odd. And I don't want to throw that out into the universe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stuff happens.
Take it back.
But let's say in the next 6 months, we should have a couple of events that we're planning. First is we want to have our state legislators into the IC for a breakfast lunch and kind of talk to them about what we do. Within our catchment area, we have a bipartisan representation. We're not specifically Republican or Democrat. So in order for us to really educate both parties, we need to have them come together and give them I don't want to say disability awareness training, but they certainly do.
I'm sure they could benefit from it.
I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So, what else should guys see on the horizon for the next couple of months for you?
November, we're looking at another election. Which one is it?
It is our school board election.
Okay, yeah. So we're probably looking at a similar event to the city council candidate forum, which is fun. Yay!
Something an event to plan.
Yes. So that's really the only event in the, you know, somewhat near horizon. Other than that, it's a lot of training and personal development for the team, which I think is really exciting.
And something might come up where we do host an event.
Yeah.
Just nothing yet solidly on the books.
The party for the interpreter
certification bill.
Yeah.
Yes, which is not solidly on the books yet, but it's
be.
In the works. We, as the Independence Center, sponsored a bill about increasing the interpreter certifications that we will accept as the state of Colorado, which is a really great thing because we often have an interpreter shortage in this state because of the strict regulations on it. Which often means that deaf individuals are receiving uncertified interpreters out in the field from agencies, which obviously is harmful to access because those interpreters are not interpreting correctly the information. So this bill broadens that and accepts a lot of other types of certifications so we can have more qualified interpreters going out to the community. And so we passed this bill it was signed by the governor just this Tuesday, which is really awesome. So go Matthew, Patricia, everyone that worked so hard on this bill. It's wonderful to see that. So we're looking at hosting a party to celebrate that, inviting the deaf community and the interpreter community and really just, you know, coming together and celebrating around that.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And then Carrie, we have a number of trainings on the books that are coming up, not only for disability awareness training and in assistance animals, but emergency preparedness, because we are about to hit that season.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So let's talk about where is the team going? Who are they going to go educate this in the next couple of months?
So a couple of staff are going to be going out to Grand Junction, I believe in May, to be part of this day-long training that a local public health coalition there is putting on for emergency responders and, you know, other folks who work directly with people with disabilities during disaster situations. So we're going to be educating them about the specific needs that people have and how to interact effectively in emergency situations.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know that we have partnered with a couple of our transit companies and apartment association.
Mm-hmm.
To provide some trainings to their public, their community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really exciting to see that. And then Universal Design, we have a couple of speaking engagements coming up as well. And then in peer support, which is a different department under advocacy, but we are starting to expand our peer support groups, which of course mm-hmm. come with
yes.
different engagements.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have the Pride weekend that's coming up that we're very excited about.
Yes.
And
we're going to have a table.
Yes, mm-hmm. we're going to have a table. We're going to be able to participate in their events. And we got some really cool swag, so come out and see our table. And then we're going to start some support groups for, hopefully, the mental health community
mm-hmm.
that has really asked us for those trainings and the trainings and the support groups. So it's amazing how the two departments come right beside each other and support each other and work on different issues together. So it's exciting to see what we're gonna accomplish in the next couple of months. The first quarter and a half has been interesting,
but fun and successful.
Yes, very successful. And you know, it's been kind of fun to watch how we have to reschedule stuff and then accommodate for different things that come up. And every single time the team rises to the occasion, and then it's like people are blown away. And I'm like, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. So so how did people get a hold of us? How do they find us?
The Independence Center website, as well as our emails.
So go ahead and tell me your email address.
My email is elivinggood, which is LIVENGOOD, at theindependencecenter.org.
And it's recommended that no one calls you.
Yes, please don't call me. I'm deaf, so I won't answer. And I'm boycotting phones, so.
So just get us through email.
Email's great.
All right, Carrie, how do we get hold of you?
So you can call me at 719-471-8181, extension 116. Or my email is cbaatz, which is BAATZ, at theindependencecenter.org.
Excellent. And then for trainings, is there a training web page that they can go see all of our accessible pages, mm-hmm. all of our accessible trainings?
Absolutely. So if you go to our website, you can even just search in the search bar trainings and it'll take you right to that page, and you'll see a description of our trainings, which we're updating right now, but you can still kind of see our descriptions, and then there's a button that says request training, and it's easy as that.
And it'll get sent directly to you, and
yes,
and we'll be able to, and individuals will be able to get a response directly from Carrie. So it's not going into cyber nowhere. It'll actually go to Carrie and
yes.
you'll get a response from her.
That's right.
And, you know, the cool thing about our trainings is when you request a training, you can tell us, you know, we're experiencing a lot of occurrences with a particular disability.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, I would really like to, you know, have a little bit more insight or some more, you know, one-on-one experience with how to handle, you know, concerns, or how do I interact with someone with some sort of value? What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And then you, again, take the training and go, here you go. Here's the beautiful training. Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure it's valuable to you.
So absolutely.
We're not just talking at people.
Really yes. tailoring it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah,
because we want to make sure that the time that we spend with you is going to be valuable and that you're walking away with something that's going to help you moving forward.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right, Sierra, how do we get hold of you?
You can email me at scortez at theindependencecenter.com, or you can call me at 719-471-8181, extension 169.
Awesome. And just to mention that we do have a number of our issue pages out on our website. So Universal Design has a very robust page with all of our issue briefs on it. So does Assistance Animals. We don't necessarily have a disability awareness page because our whole website is about disability awareness.
All of it.
So, but yeah, go out and explore it. It's under community organizing. That was the former name of our advocacy department. And you can go out there and check out our trainings, check out our blog. The podcast will be out there just to go out and kind of explore and see what's out there and what we're doing. And then you can also reach out to anybody on this podcast about getting involved in systems change. If you have an issue that you believe needs to change, or you don't quite know why it's happening, or you believe it's a barrier for you to live independently, let us know. We'll do some digging. We'll bring you in and talk to you about it and kind of do some investigation on our end to see if it's really a systems change issue or it's really an individual issue, and then we'll send you to our individual advocacy specialist, Arthel Alexander, and he'll work with you one-on-one in order to remove that barrier. But if it truly is a systems thing, we jump in with you to make that change. So we don't just take it from you and say thanks for letting us know. You're going to be involved in the advocacy because we want to make sure that we teach as we go.
Mm-hmm. And we want to hear your stories.
Yes, definitely. So just to close up, I wanted to talk a little bit about disability awareness and some things that we've been seeing in our community that maybe we could educate the listeners on not to do anymore. So Sierra had one. And
is
then,
this supposed to be covered in like 5 minutes?
Yes, pick one. Just one. And then we'll have a whole separate disability awareness podcast on all the other funny things that we see in the community. So Sierra has one, and then I have one, and then we'll end from there. So go ahead.
This one has been killing me lately, and I have done it, and I feel horrible about it because you'll understand why. So There are crosswalks at stoplights and intersections, shockingly for a reason. So that means that you have to not block it with your car. So those of us who drive, we have to be intentional about not pulling in to that crosswalk, even though we might not think about it. So because that takes away access from people who are walking the crosswalk or using their wheelchair to cross the crosswalk, not in danger.
And oftentimes the cars will block the curb cuts for wheelchair users to even be able to get back onto the sidewalk in safety.
All of the above. Mm-hmm. All of the above. So just being mindful about it. I know it's very easy to not think about it, especially if you're not a user of those things, the curb cuts or the crosswalks on a regular basis. But, oh my goodness.
I have seen it a couple of times. And, you know, even when you're trying to take a right-hand turn and you see the person coming, they're crossing the street, and you're like, I can squeeze out before them. And then you end up getting really too close to a person when you're trying to take a right. You're at a red light. Like, stop and take a look, because you're going to damage. You can kill someone. You can damage property.
Yes. Literally.
Yes.
It's just logically, you just got to look at it and make sure that you're not going to hurt someone. And then I had an experience on vacation where we're just very hyper vigilant, because this is what we do for a living. Looking at,
we see it.
Yes,
we're aware.
Yes, the accessible parking spots with the accessible parking additional feet that are striped for wheelchair access. And I went on vacation to a southern state. I won't name it. Starts with an L.
Not Texas.
And I was just amazed when I was in a parking lot and all of the striped access aisles were filled with cars that did not have the placard or the handicapped accessible.
So they were parking in spots that weren't even spots.
Correct. Amazing to me. So, you know, I don't know if this will reach that southern state that starts with an L, but, you know, let's just own that that is an accessible spot. I realize it's not close for you, but you don't have the need to need that aisle yet. And in the future, just like aging in place, being aware of that is there for a reason. And if you need it, you want it available to you if you need it, versus it's just closer. So, yeah, just throwing it out there.
Can I speak on one?
Yes.
And so this one isn't necessarily a barrier, but it's just an etiquette-wise thing. Something that I notice a lot of people do is when somebody discloses that they are disabled, people will apologize.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is incredibly demeaning.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I've gotten to a point in my life where I disclose that I'm deaf and somebody says, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, I'm not. You know, and so if you just simply change from responding with I'm sorry to, oh, okay.
Right on.
What can I do to provide you access? Or do you need any support? Or that's awesome, because being disabled is awesome. It's just a different kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Then you will totally change the way that that person feels.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You've just empowered them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Carrie, do you have
any? That's very true. Oh my gosh, so many.
I need you to narrow it down to one.
Yes, yes. Along the lines of, you know, educating people to see disability as natural and normal, okay.
This is a good one.
Oh, there have been several times where I'm just walking downtown and my limp is showing, and a complete stranger will come up to me and, you know, kind of, you know, put their hand on my shoulder and stop me and say, can I please pray for you? You know, and and it's very hard for me to respond in that moment.
Well, nicely, at
you
least.
Know. Yes.
You just touched my person. Cringing. Without permission.
Yes. Yes. You know, people feel the need to fix people with disabilities when they don't know them. And, you know, most of us don't want to be fixed. We want to be accepted and seen for who we are. So, you know, just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, don't violate someone's personal space. Don't think that they need to be fixed.
Don't assume anyone's less than,
right?
Because mm-hmm. they're different. Mm-hmm. They're just mm-hmm. different.
Right. And, you know, we're so used to being asked questions about our disabilities that, honestly, we almost have it on record when we respond to someone.
I have legit, spiel.
Yes, me too. But we're so used to it that if you ask us a question, we are not going to feel like you're bothering us or that you're going to offend us in some way. When you don't ask and there's an assumption there, that's where it gets awkward for you, not us. And then also you've now put us in a category that's really unfair. So just throwing that out there. So yeah, good one, Carrie. Very good. All right. So thank you guys so much for coming in and talking to me.
Thank you, Becca.
Kind of pulled you in and said, we're going to have a conversation. And, you know, please reach out to us if you find that you have an access barrier. And it doesn't have to be physical access. It could be communication access, being able to access your medical benefits if you need some help trying to navigate through some of that stuff as well. Please contact us and let us know how we can help you. Continue to live independently. And if you find a barrier that you want to work on, let us know. We'll come by and right by you and help you get through that. So thanks again for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.